This meeting is Tools for Sobriety. I received a loving invitation from GSO to chair this meeting, and the only thing I could remember about Tools was when I came in, someone told me that I didn't know a feeling from a crescent wrench. The good news was I knew what a crescent wrench was. And then I was told that if I only had a hammer, every problem looked like a nail. And so the three speakers here today are to give us their experience, strength, and hope in using Tools for Sobriety. I would introduce to you DK from New York.
My name is Dee, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I just had the experience of shakily lifting the water up to my lips, and it reminded me of one of my last drinks, or several of my last drinks, where I had to go down to drink. I want to thank the GSO for asking me to speak today. Jane and Neil and Isabel for being up here with me, my friends who are here, my sponsor, and all of you guys who look so good. I've just been grinning ever since I got to Toronto. I said to my sponsor yesterday, well, I knew enough not to say I'm nervous. So I said, I had a thought that maybe by today, particularly if I had to go last, I might be nervous. And she looked at me and said, it's Thursday. You're worried about Friday? And then she said, darling, none of us are that important. And that helped me a lot. I'm thinking particularly this morning when I woke up about two people. One is a gal that I met a few weeks ago who's been coming around to the program as long as I have. My sobriety date is April 15th, 1983, and she is not sober. I'm thinking about another gal I met in the Bedford Hills prison where we took a meeting one day, got around to her, and she said, you know, I was more locked up out there than I am in here. Tools for Sobriety. I can't say that I started out with any. I started to drink when I was a young teenager, and I got drunk right away, and getting drunk became very important. Something happened to me when I got drunk. I felt like all my problems were solved. Now, you know and I know now that alcohol doesn't teach, it doesn't build, it doesn't nourish, it doesn't heal. And so I experienced none of those things during my drinking career. What I experienced was a shrinking world. I started out with a few ambitions and ideas of traveling and helping people, and I used to lip sync to Barbara Streisand and conduct orchestras, and you know, my world got smaller and smaller and smaller until finally, well, I'll tell you what it was like at the end of my drinking. I carried a heavy shoulder bag, which is not different from today. My shoulder bag is still pretty heavy, but there are different things in it today. Then I had a pint of Clan MacGregor because I could not go 2 hours without a drink. I had a bottle of Maalox because my stomach was so burnt out that I needed to take a slug of Maalox before I took the slug of Clan MacGregor. And I had a bottle of extra strength Tylenol, which I just sort of prayed would ease my pain. And it didn't touch my pain. And the Clan MacGregor didn't touch my pain at the end of my drinking. I was drinking round the clock. It killed me to think about walking into a bar and spending $4 on a dinky little glass of whiskey and having to talk to people when I could take my bottle into the bathroom stall and sit on the toilet and stare at the graffiti on the back of the door and amuse myself by having clever thoughts about what I was reading. You know. That was a good day. Toward the end of my drinking, I could not get drunk. I could not stop drinking. It was making me very sick. And meanwhile, you know, many years had gone by. The people I had gone to high school with had gone on to college, or they had learned some skills and gotten into businesses. I mean, talk about tools. They had learned how to be friends with people, how to develop relationships. They got married. They had families. They bought homes. You know, and I was sitting in a bathroom stall. I saw a sign one day on a bus, and it was an advertisement for the National Council on Alcoholism. And it had a bunch of very friendly-looking people, like you guys, standing on a sunny stoop of a brownstone in New York City, and it said, "Does someone you love have a problem with alcohol?" And I thought, well, yeah. My idea was this. This was the extent of my problem-solving skills. I thought that if I went to that brownstone and met those people, they would invite me to come live with them and they would take care of me. It was either that or kill myself. That was what I came up with as far as tools were concerned. And I went to the National Council. I remember I had to have a drink before I went in because I'd go for about 2 hours and I'd be shaking too much. And they asked me, well, why don't you go to Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, well, is that where I should go? They said, we think that'd be a good place for you. And I went down to the central office, the intergroup office. It was in the Flatiron Building at the time. And I stood outside a heavily frosted glass door, and my heart was just ticking in my chest. And my hands were shaking, and I was sweating. And I had no idea what was on the other side of that door. And the grace of God entered my heart, and I put my hand on that doorknob, and like it says in the third step essay, the door opened almost of itself. I was met by smiling, sober drunks. Little Mary invited me in. Hi, how are you? Come on in, sit down. Brought me half a cup of coffee, introduced me to a fellow with a beard who told me his story and suggested that I go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I was incensed. 90 meetings in 90 days? I have things to do. I can't possibly do that. And then he introduced me to my first tool. He said, well, why don't you just try to do it one day at a time? Well, that was a tool that I wasn't to pick up for a while because I went home and I finished the job, as I used to call it, and passed out. And I got a call the next morning from a gravelly-voiced fellow named John H. who said, would you like to meet me at a meeting? And I'll tell you something, I had not been invited anywhere for a very long time by anybody, and that was one of the nicest things that anybody had said to me. And I met him, and he and the fellow who was speaking at the beginner's meeting that day spent the entire day with me. Now, I know that they had other plans for that day when they woke up. But I was a shaky newcomer, and they put everything aside, and they sat with me all day long. Now, I thought that the reason they were spending time with me was because I was so charming. I thought that for a long time, actually. They walked me to my apartment and asked me if I had any booze in the apartment, and gave me the name of a lady to look up at a meeting that night, and my AA journey began. But I did not get sober right away. I didn't particularly like AA when I first walked in. I thought you were nice people. You seemed so different from me, though. You know, you had clear eyes. You were happy. You were together. You knew how to talk to people. And so what happened to me, and it scares me today when I think about it, is that arrogance kicked in, you know. Now, here I was dying, and I thought that you guys were inane, that you just repeated yourself all the time, you know. And, keep coming back, and all that jazz, you know. And the problem was, what I didn't understand was, I had had a history of psychiatric hospitalizations, and I thought that my problems were much deeper and much more complex than yours. And that I admitted, it was not hard for me to admit that I had a problem drinking, but I didn't think that was going to solve all my problems. And I was right, it didn't. You know, stopping drinking did not solve my problems. So I went for about a year in and out of the rooms, drinking when I got mad, drinking when I hit my 30th birthday, drinking when I felt sorry for myself. My last drink was a Colt 45. I didn't buy just a regular beer. I wanted the most bang for my buck, and it came up warm and green through my nose. I was too weak to move my head out of the way. It got all over me, and I knew finally I could not drink, and alcohol was not going to help me anymore. But I did not pick up the tools that you all so freely offered me. I continued to feel that I was unique, that I was uniquely miserable. I had justified unhappiness. Just a little over a year from the day I walked into my first meeting, I took a handful of pills that I had hoarded from my last hospitalization. And that was my ace in the hole. I was going to kill myself. And I went into a coma. I took them on a Saturday night. I vaguely remember having convulsions at some point along the way. And I woke up sick as a dog on Tuesday morning. And I was not dead. And I realized a couple of things. One was that my parents had not done that to me. I was used to blaming everything on my parents. I realized that I had done that to myself. And then I realized that I was glad I woke up, that I didn't really want to die, that I just didn't know how to live sober. I had no tools. And I got the thought, go back to AA and ask them how to do this thing. And that's what I did. And I was introduced to concepts like, I'll tell you the first big one that really had an impact on me, and I'm sort of doing it today, and that was suit up and show up. Act as if. Now, my problem, once I put down the drink and played that suicide card, was that I didn't feel like doing anything. And I had it all backwards. I had lived my entire life based on the idea that I would do something when I felt like it. So I lay on the sofa and didn't feel like doing anything, didn't do anything, and guess what? Nothing happened. Nothing changed. So I was introduced to this idea of act as if. act as if you want to go to a meeting. Act as if you're really interested in that person sitting next to you. Ask them how they're doing. So that was one of the first tools I was introduced to. Another one was, and these are tools, believe me, that I pick up and I need every single day. Staying in the now. My sponsor said to me yesterday, "You're worried about Friday? Today is Thursday." She'll tell me, "Wiggle your toes. Be in this moment. This is where God is. This is where you all are. This is where the help is." So I learned how to stay in the now. Now, I'm not totally accomplished at this. I can get into a kind of a dip, you know, and get all morbid about the past. And I'll tell you, I have never thought about the future with enthusiasm. It just doesn't come naturally to me. I think of time in the future, and all I think about is problems. You know. So I try to stay in the now where I know my God is and where I know I'm all right. Another tool my sponsor told me about or suggested that I do was she suggested that I make a gratitude list. And I was kind of baffled, you know. I mean, I know I'm grateful for my sobriety. But she said, "Well, why don't you start with being grateful for 10 fingers and 10 toes, legs that work, hands that are able to type. I make my living doing secretarial work." And the trick with the gratitude list was 10 new things every day. And I'll tell you what that does. At first, it's a little intimidating. You know, I'm not sure I can think of 10 things I'm grateful for. But if you do it long enough, I find myself walking down the street and I'll see a little kid laughing and I'll think, "I'm grateful for that." And it changes the way I see the world when I'm writing my gratitude list. I'll tell you about the last tool I'm going to talk about today, and that's prayer. Now, I didn't run into my sponsor until I was several years sober, and she took me through the book. And I learned that finding a power greater than alcohol and greater than D's thinking was the purpose of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that process changed my life. And is continuing to change my life. But we started out with baby steps. Get down on your knees in the morning and say, "Please," it was suggested to me. And at night when you come in and you've had a sober day, get down on your knees and say, "Thank you." And very slowly from that tiny, tiny beginning. Now, I'll tell you one of the problems with me in prayer was I wanted to know who I was praying to before I commenced the conversation. It didn't occur to me that people for centuries and greater minds than mine have been addressing this problem of who. And I just decided to call it a power greater than my thinking, greater than alcohol, and eventually it has become for me the source of the healing love that I have experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, my toolkit is full, and my cup runneth over. Thank you.
Thank you, Dee. I'd like to introduce Neil from Hamilton, Ontario.
Good evening. I am an alcoholic member of the Hamilton group. My name is Neil. And I'm here purely by the grace of God, because if God had given justice to alcoholics, I certainly wouldn't be here. I'd either be in a penitentiary, a mental institution, or a grave, and that grave might have been shallow. I was thinking today before I got here how fortunate I am to be here. I was 6 months in this program and I was struggling. And my sponsor at the time brought me to a conference in Erie, Pennsylvania. And some point in that weekend, I saw speakers and a lot of them were great. And I realized and I asked God if one day I could do that. And 3 years later, I'm here speaking at a world conference. It's a true honor and a privilege to be here and to see how amazing Alcoholics Anonymous really is. And it's a true honor and a privilege because I know that today, in the time that I'm speaking here, in the next 20 minutes, somebody will die of alcoholism, an alcohol-related disease. I know it'll be because that person can't admit defeat to alcoholism and cannot get honest with themselves and will never be able to forgive themselves. You people taught me the tools. You people told me. You people said, forgive yourself because God already has. The first couple of tools I learned when I came to this program, and the very first one was I had to learn to shut my mouth. I'd go home and I'd run into my mother and father and they would bring up one of my performances and I just had to keep my head down and say I was wrong, I was right, they were right, until I figured it all out. The second thing I had to learn to do was to identify rather than compare. And my sponsor today, Cliff, he used to speak at meetings and I used to follow him around because I used to love the way he used to say that there was a boy with a dream who stood in front of Madison Square Garden and chose a drink instead of a hockey career. And of course, being the person I was then, I'd be driving home chuckling and saying, what a buffoon, how can you do that? Now I know if I'd have called him on that then, he would have said to me, listen, knucklehead, what did alcohol take away from you? What was your Madison Square Gardens and what are you going to do today? And he would have been right. I had to learn to identify rather than compare. As a young kid, I was restless, I was irritable, and I was discontent. At the age of 12, I had my first experience with alcoholism. My mom's cousin had drank himself to death. I didn't sleep for 2 nights because all that was left of him was a shoebox of personal effects. My parents explained it to me that there are only two types of people, those who can drink and those who cannot. I'm one of those people who can't drink, but by the grace of God, I'm sober today. I was a pretty good kid in school. I was very shy. I played hockey and I ended up playing hockey at high levels. I could remember I had a propensity to win. I wanted to win all the time. One of the tools that helped me was surrender to win. It was hard because I programmed myself to win. I always had to win. Surrendering to win didn't come easy to me. Neither did die to live. I'm pretty sure the person I am today is not the person I was 3 years ago. And I thank you people for that. My high school years were pretty good years. Grade 9, 10, and 11, I'm an honor student. And I'd like to just backtrack a little bit and tell you I came from a good family. My father drank. He used to get drunk, but when he saw what was happening to the family and it was causing a problem in his life, he quit. He drinks one shot in a day, doesn't require any more. My mother's side of the family, there were many alcoholics. And as my obsession to drink grew, her obsession to see me quit grew even greater than mine. Like I said, my high school years were good years. I'm an honor student. I'm playing soccer for one of the best high schools in the province. And I'm still playing hockey. At the age of 18, you'd probably see a young guy. And I grew up in the Italian community, and having had a glass of wine wouldn't have been a big thing then. But I don't remember alcohol doing anything great for me. Age of 18, you'd see a young man in front of the mirror, pruning himself, getting all ready, and looking into the mirror and saying, God, Neil, you are a stallion. I'd get up in the morning and say, God, you're an Italian ass. But at 11 o'clock, the call would come. One of my friends would call. They would say to me, "We had a great time, Neil. You were on fire last night." And alcohol started to do it for me. Started to play the part in my life. You see, you people taught me that alcohol stunned my growth. A few years later, the age of 36, my thinking's like an 18-year-old kid. It had reverted me back. At 18, I'm not a fall-down drunk. I'm just a young guy that wants to go out with his buddies and have a good time. I'm shy, and alcohol's providing me a friend. The doors start to slam. School's no longer an option. I don't care about it. I start to miss the odd practices. God, game on a Friday night, that's all right. Don't need that. My thinking's starting to change completely. I'm starting to talk about athletes like, these guys don't understand, but the time clock will run out on them too. By 19, sports are done. My father taught me a trade at a young age, and at the age of 19, I decided to go into the business world. See, most people go into the business world to make a little money, get some independence, be their own boss. I didn't. I went into business to be number one, the leader of the gang, the leader of the pack, and I wouldn't sleep at nights brainstorming. See, you people told me brainstorming's not for the alcoholic. You people gave me the opportunity to start another business this year and to do it differently. From the age of 21 to the age of 31, I'd do a run on life. Everything went my way. I didn't need tools then. I didn't need sponsors. I didn't need the big book, and I didn't need steps because I was running on self-will. And everything was going great. At the age of 26, I'd meet my wife. Now, my wife and I had something big thing in common back then. You see, she was in love with me, and I was in love with myself. You people told me that love is an action. It's not a feeling. You people taught me that. By the age of 31, alcohol's starting to play a part. I get awarded the flooring contract at the Air Canada Centre. My first daughter's about to be born. And this thought, just the thought, just like Jim in the big book, a thought comes to mind. I don't want my son or daughter to see their daddy come home drunk. I just don't think that's right. So I try and do something about it. And I don't drink for 9 months. We get the job complete. My daughter's born in between. And I'm driving home, and the guys call me, "Neil, why don't you come out?" Not drinking, guys. You see, I don't look at them as just going out and having a good time. It has to be alcohol. I had two drinks that night, two lemon vodkas, and I can still remember it. And I thought, what have I done? I complete the Air Canada Centre project. Fate has it. Things start to go bad. A couple years later, I'm scrambling for my life. You see, I don't have tools to say it's by pain that we grow. I don't know what real prayer is about. See, I'm lost. I can't be found. Everything went my way. Now it's not going my way. And I'm scared. See, my drinking changes now. Now I don't drink to have a good time. It starts out because I want to have a good time, but I'm drinking for oblivion. Most nights I'm on my knees begging for my mother. A couple years later, I signed a bankruptcy paper on a company that I had started at the age of 18. I wouldn't take another sober breath for 2 years. My second daughter's born in May just before I get sober, and all I want to do is stay without one drink for 1 week because I know I have to be in the hospital. Bring my wife. I'm drunk that night, and I don't want anybody around. And the loneliness I felt that night. You know, why would I have picked up a drink? Why would I have picked up a drink? Why would I have done that? It was my obsession to drink. You people told me that this is an obsession. You told me it's an allergy of the body. At this point of the game, I have no It's a fragmentation at a soul level, and I'm just done. I'm drinking every night. My night at work, I'm leaving at 4:30. I'm drinking maybe 6 beers, 3 vodka sodas. That's in about a 45-minute period so that I can go home and be a father. My last drunk would start out with me not drinking for 3 weeks, going to my office, heading over to DiMaggio's because, you see, I had this craving for chicken wings. I come through the door and the girl has it ready. Vodka soda, right, Neil? I haven't been drinking in 3 weeks. The girl looks at me and says, I could throw it out. I says, no, don't do that. Anyways, I start to go to all the little bars in the area. See, I don't know that I just got to keep feeding my allergy. Now I'm coming home, and it's a court. My neighbors are all in the court, and I'm falling down drunk. See, I'm not the 18-year-old kid anymore. I'm not that boy that drinks to have a good time. I'm not that kid that plays hockey, and I'm scared. And I'm a fall down drunk, and I'm staggering. My parents figured it would be a good idea for me to come home with them. And I did. And I knew what I had to do. See, it was no surprise to me when I read in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that when Bill Wilson spoke about stock market crash and people throwing themselves off of buildings. See, I knew that because I thought that was an honorable thing to do. So on this ride, I'm thinking I'm just going to do myself in one way or the other. And remember my mom's cousin that drank himself to death. As much as I fought it, I'm there now. That's who I am. Anyways, the house is quiet, and I go to open the door, and doesn't my mother tie a belt from one door to the other? I can't get out, but see, I had this one unselfish thought. And the thought was, what have I done to this family? I'm no longer the guy that's running the business. See, I know at this point what's expected of a businessman. I know what's expected of a father, a brother, a son. And I am none of those things. Funny how things work out. A couple months before that, I was having problems in a club, and I said, I think there's something wrong with my drinking. And this girl's mother had been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years, and she carried the message. You see, today I like to carry the message. It's the new people that are keeping me sober. If I said nothing today, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love this program. I love watching others recover. And at the same time, I'm recovering myself. Anyways, my sister the next day says, so what are you going to do, Neil? You got to go to the Morning Center, but you got to make the call. I said, no, I'll call Alcoholics Anonymous. And I called central office, and I said, can I have an appointment with you? Lady kind of laughed and said, no, there's meetings going on all the time. I said, no, not today, tomorrow. From the minute I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt like I had come home. I felt like I came home. You people told me, get a group, get a sponsor, get active. Use the telephone. That's a great tool. It will become easier for you to make a call to your sponsor than to go pick up a drink. That was huge for me. Oh, I did what everybody else does. He's too busy. He doesn't have time, but that's me talking. Use all the tools that Alcoholics Anonymous provides you. There's 100 tools. There's the big book. There's calling your sponsor. The important thing, get a group, get a sponsor, get active as soon as possible. I was in my sponsor's house yesterday. See, my life can get unmanageable in a span of 10 minutes. You see, Alcoholics Anonymous provided a power in my life. It taught me to get. This program told me that God has all power and I was beyond human aid. You helped me find that. See, if my life gets unmanageable, I know I can call somebody. I know I can ask. Last night I was at my daughter's soccer game. And my daughter's 3 and her friend is 2 years old. And they wanted me to put him on my knee and give him a horse ride and all that. Then there was the point that the two of them were closing their eyes and they were sleeping. And I realized right there what it meant to be childlike in the eyes of my Creator. You see, they had a total comfort zone. Is that not a reason to stay sober? You people taught me how to love. You nursed me when I was sick. You were God's channel so that I could be on this podium today. And I wish everybody another 24 hours, and thank you for the privilege of allowing me to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil. I'd like to introduce Isabel from New Jersey.
Hi, everybody. I'm so happy to be here. I am definitely an alcoholic, and I come from northern New Jersey. We're sponsoring a little hospitality suite, so come and see us. There's great sobriety in AA. And a lot of the tools you'll find in our suite, because we have a great history, the big book. We are the fathers of the big book, so that's my Bible. I don't want to be a Bible beater, but I sort of am. For the grace of God, I am here today, pardon my glasses, and I'm here because of you. I thought I would talk a little bit about the tools that I found in AA, and the greatest tool I found in AA are the people of AA. If it wasn't for you being here when I came in, I wouldn't be here today, which is truly a gift. I did not want to be here. I worked very hard not to be here. And I never could understand why I was an alcoholic, because I just drank a whole lot of booze by myself or with somebody else. I just couldn't get it. When I was here, I came for, I would say, and I was sober. Maybe I was in AA about 3 years before I really surrendered. I was very stubborn, self-centered, and really knew it all. And I needed all the tools, but I was afraid to pick them up. And I didn't know that my problem was fear. My problem was I did not know who Isabel was. Who is this person? A little of my background is that I came from an alcoholic family. My father was a rager, and I was always terrified of him. So I've learned since then that what happened to me is I became people pleaser. We'll keep Dad happy. We won't have screaming and yelling, and things will go well. And it worked. And when I came into AA, someone said to me, "Is, you're not 10 years old anymore. Everybody out there is not an alcoholic, and you're people-pleasing yourself to death. You've got to straighten out your life, make commitments, learn to stand on your own 2 feet. I was a victim. Oh, my gosh. And I loved it. I didn't know I loved it. I was a victim because I used all of those tools. Poor me. You had my life, you would drink too. I just wanted to stop the world and get off. And actually, in my drinking career, I had 2 convulsions in which I exactly did the same thing. And after those, I wasn't going to have another drink. And about 2 days later, I was drinking again. I could still not understand how I was powerless. The problem with us alcoholics is lack of power. So how do we find this power? Where do we look for it? I remember after I was in rehab 7.5 weeks, the doctors and a few of the nurses met me in this room, and I thought I was going to graduate with honors because I was goody two-shoes. And they said to me, "Is, you're not going to make it. You're going to die out there. We want you to go to Alena Lodge." And I was afraid because I had heard little bits and cronies about Alena Lodge, and when you go in there, they don't let you out. I really wanted to stop the world and get off, but the point is that I came to understand that once I did that, maybe I never get back on. And so that started to scare me. These doctors and the nurses said to me, you can't get honest with yourself. If you can't get honest with yourself, is you'll never stay sober. I, of course, was really, mocus is the word, whatever. I did not really understand. What do you want me to do? Just tell me what to do. I'll do it, you know. And that was with a lot of contempt. So they let me come to this rehab every single day for a year. And what was that? That was service work and education on my part on how to live and what an alcoholic is. They sent me to South Plainfield to a meeting at the YMCA in which there were people who had no money and nothing and lived under bridges. And for a long time, I didn't know why I was there. The common bond that we have, the love that we get in AA is the thing that brings us all together. I came to understand that it doesn't make any difference whatsoever how much I drank, how little I drank, or how long I drank. It's what it did to me when I was drinking. And when I started to surrender, it was truly the gift of my life, because once I had surrendered, I could start to pick up a few tools, because these tools lie at our feet every day. All of you speak them every day. I had to learn that it's my job to pick them up and use just one. When I was coming through the convention center, all those tools are hanging on the wall, going through that little tube in there, you know, first things first. One step at a time, keep it simple, stupid. You know, whatever they are, use them. Just a little bit of time, as someone mentioned. I didn't want help. Honest, open, and willing is my theme, because I had to get honest, and I thought I was honest. You know, I wasn't stealing things, but I was not honest. At the time I came into AA, I had several really horrible things happen to me, and that's how I looked at them. Today, it's just the way my life went. I married an alcoholic who was a wonderful, wonderful man. I was married for 17 years, and I had 4 children. And when my youngest was 4 years old, my husband killed himself. And I know today, everyone said, oh, what a wonderful guy he was. Why did this happen? It happened because he was an alcoholic, and we had no idea that this was a disease that kills people. John was a gracious, wonderful person. When he got in trouble, he didn't have any tools to use. So he thought he would not disgrace his family, and he'd carry the burden himself. You know, I got to that point myself several years later, because when he died, it was poor me, another drink. And that's what I did for quite a while. And when I say that I used my sadness as a way to make friends and everything else, it's just what I did. The big book tells us sometimes we don't want to give up some of our defects of character, because I didn't know who I'd be if you didn't feel sorry for me or you wouldn't reach out to me. I know how to speak to people by, you know, telling them that I'm having trouble with this and I'm doing that. And that's how I communicated my life, rather than to make a decision to do something on my own or to ask a question. when life was overwhelming me of, like, how do we carry insurance and how do you get your car fixed and how do you get all the kids to school and where, how do you make enough money to support them all, I didn't ask anybody. And nobody's ventured forward to tell me. The biggest tool I found in AA was not that everybody in AA has all the answers, but they share their experience, strength, and hope, and through that we grow ourselves and learn where their mistakes were, maybe where ours are, and how to move forward. The gift that our higher power gave us is Bill Wilson. It makes me cry because Silkworth knew the answer that we have a disease. And Dr. John knew that we needed to have a spiritual experience. But none of that worked until Bill found Bob. And he learned that one alcoholic speaking to another will keep us sober, not for today, for always. I talk to alcoholics every day. They are like part of my life. I couldn't bring myself to go to the diner with these people because I knew why this one got divorced, why that one doesn't have a job, and That was me. When I started to get better, I can remember I was driving home in my car, and I admitted after a speaker's meeting that I went out with about 10 people, is you had a good time tonight. I had to talk to myself. It's one of the biggest things I have to do is talk to myself and hear myself say it out loud. You had a good time tonight, and you know what? Those people put up with you for a long time. Judging people was part of my, I don't know what, part of me, because I remember one of my friends, she was definitely in trouble with drinking, but I remember if she was really loaded, but not a little more than me, in my opinion, then I could have another drink. What the heck is that? You know, when I used to drink my gin, I'm a big gin drinker. I remember when I was in rehab, she asked me for the first time. I needed to talk to people to know that what I drank was not right. 27 drinks a night is not too cool. I didn't want to know I drank 27. And when I was first asked about that, she said, well, just tell me if you go out on a date or something, how many drinks do you have? So I started relating, well, I have a couple before I go, then maybe we have a couple martinis at the bar, and then when we sit down, we'll have a little wine. If we're going to dance, I switch to gin and tonic because you get really thirsty. And I really don't have dessert. I have a little Zambuca or something like that, you know. And when I'm talking to her for the very first time, I started to recognize, is you drank more than that night, and you don't know what you drank. That's the gift of one alcoholic speaking to another. I was told, well, how do you drink on a regular night? Well, I'm out in the kitchen making a little spaghetti dinner for all these kids, and I have ice. And I told her, first of all, I drank martinis, and she said, oh, in the little glass, and you stir and stuff. Oh, no, I said, don't do that because too much washing of dishes. I said, I have a glass, and I pack ice in it, and I pour gin over it, and I drink it. Oh. Once again, the alcoholics in her said to me, so why didn't you tell me you drink gin on the rocks? Why didn't I? Because I'm in denial. I think that martinis are classier than gin on the rocks. So I want you to think, and I'm drinking something very sophisticated, you know, sick people. They asked me to go home. I was seeing her every day now in the rehab. Go home And I want you to, you know, fill up that glass with all that ice and then just pour some water in there and then put it in a measuring cup and just see how much you were drinking. And how many did you have? Two or three, I would say. But I didn't do that for a year and a half, and I was sober. And I lived by myself. How much denial is that? I didn't even want to know what I used to do. I can't get better unless I know what I used to do. Well, I did it one day, tiptoed across my kitchen like there were 100 people watching me pour the water and stuff. It was 8 ounces of gin in that glass. That was just beginners for me. I never dreamed that I had to have this liquid that I thought helped me to relax. I'll just sit down, think about a few of my problems, I'll get them all solved. You know, and by 4:30 in the morning, I was still doing that in my bedroom in my head. Oh, thank you for finding me. My sister-in-law and my brother stopped drinking, and I remember Karen came over and she told me, "Is, I'm an alcoholic." I remember thinking, "Oh, don't be nuts. I drink twice as much as you." I had her in one of my classifications, and that classification was if Karen had a hangnail, she'd go to a plastic surgeon. So for heaven's sake, now she thinks she's an alcoholic. She doesn't even know what an alcoholic is. But for the grace of God, they kept working on me, and they were really the first people that pushed on me. We need a push. A tool in AA is you have to be ready when you come here. But the elephant in the living room that we all walk around doesn't help any alcoholic to recover. Our job as alcoholics is to carry the message. We don't beat the message into people. We carry the message. We acknowledge that we know that they have a problem. Tools. What are these tools? These wonderful people just mentioned, I don't know how many, 25, 30 tools, one day at a time, turn it over, think, change, do the next right thing, find a higher power. I needed a higher power so that I could stay sober. I stopped drinking lots of times, but I didn't stay sober. And as I say, I was in AA maybe 3 years before I was sober. My sobriety date is 3/23/81, and I was just going to celebrate this year, and one of my dear friends, who's been around with me for a long time, he said to me, So, what do you have, like 10 years? I said to him, "Yeah, probably that's about right, because I'm not sober all the time." There's a lot of difference between being dry, being in AA, and being sober. And I want to work for that sobriety every day. And I found that very hard to begin with, and after the fact, it's part of my life. I say the third step every day in my life. I put my little shoes on, and I walk with God in my right hand. Because I know if I just have good orderly direction, if I have faith, I know I'll be okay. I'm terrified being here. So what? I have to be here because I was asked to be here. Once someone said to me, "Would you speak at an AA meeting?" So I did, but I said to my sponsor, "I just can't be doing that all the time." Said, "Don't worry, Iz, they're not going to attack the door and ask you to speak every 10 and a half minutes. Just when they ask, maybe you could say yes." "Do you think this is an ego problem?" "Oh, yes." We come from all kinds of places, and that is the gift. I went with Sister Bruni, who I sponsor, and we went to South River, and I met a gentleman that got sober in India. Isn't that wonderful? And now he lives in the United States and he shares his sobriety with all of us. These are the gifts. The tools in AA, one of the crazy tools is one of my sponsees asked me to sponsor her by writing a note on toilet paper because she was afraid to speak to me. And she's one of the greatest sponsees I have today. My people that I have sponsored through the years, many I've lost, many I've kept as friends, are the people who supported me. I got married in AA again to a wonderful guy, and a year after we were married, he died of a heart attack. Do you know what it's like to go to meetings when you have all your friends around? It was not like that before. This love we give to each other, we learn in AA to start giving that out in the world. We understand our fellows, but that world out there we have to be in every day, and that's what we need to share. We need to learn to give forth what we have received to everyone who asks or we feel need it. I'm really happy to trudge the road of happy destiny with you all, and thank you for letting me share.